columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
So Bleacher Report went through and predicted every NFL team's surprise rookie gem.
Oh, okay. Surprise rookie gem.
Surprise. So to be a surprise rookie gem, you can't be the first rounder.
Right.
Can you be the second rounder?
Surprise. That's kind of what I was thinking. I would say no. That's not a surprise. I mean, we're kind of hoping. But it wouldn't surprise us.
I'll say this. I think Denver's situation specifically is unique to that question. Because
yes.
If KJ Hamler goes out and is the best wide receiver of this class, where Jerry Jeudy went in the first round and it was the seventh team in NFL history to go wide out rounds one and two, I think that would qualify for this time around.
Okay.
Do you agree with that? Like, if KJ Hamler finishes with more touchdowns and more yards this year than Jerry Jeudy, which no one is expecting to happen, I think that would qualify as a surprise rookie gem there in the second round.
Well, that would surprise me if he did better than if he performed better than Jerry Jeudy. Yes, that would definitely surprise me.
All right, so we'll keep it to the second round and beyond. I mean, who do these guys all qualify, or do we start with the third rounders?
I think we got to start with the third, though. I mean, that would surprise me if he outdid Jerry Jeudy, but they both could have good years. That's what I'm saying. Jerry Jeudy could go out there and have a good year, and Hamler could go out there and have a great year. That wouldn't surprise me. I think we got to start third on.
Got to start third round on. Okay.
That's kind of where I'm going. I mean, everybody to each his own, Zach.
Well,
to each his own, buddy.
Okay, cool. I like it. Man, you could go a bunch of different directions with this thing.
Yeah, for me, my answer would be, and I forget this guy's name, the cornerback out of Iowa.
Michael O.J. Mudiah.
The third round pick. That would be my answer. I just think that, you know, we've talked a lot about it, Zach. I mean, you're the one that mentioned it. I mean, this is a Vic Fangio pick. And this guy, he thinks, is going to be a perfect fit for his scheme. All of a sudden, there's an opening there at the cornerback spot opposite of A.J. Boye. Boom, there you go. This guy comes in and is your starter and plays really good football. I think that would be, for me, would be my pick. What would be your pick?
Well, let me just comment on your pick, Michael O.J. Mudiah. If he doesn't do that, if he doesn't come in and start opposite A.J. Boye, what kind of shape are the Broncos in?
Well, look, I mean, you're putting lofty expectations on this third-round rookie. He's not a first-rounder, Zach.
Well, you
he wasn't a top 15 pick. I mean, that's not who we picked in the first round. So,
well, I think
if he doesn't start, I'm not surprised at all. It's not it tells me nothing. It doesn't tell me that it's a bad pick.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's a bad pick because you don't want to rush to judgment after 1 year, but if he
sounds like you want to.
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to peel back the layers of the onion here and figure out where the Broncos will be at if that dude's not ready to play from day one.
We got a lot of other guys over there that played a lot of football last year that I think somebody will step up and play well.
And that guy is who?
I can't tell you that.
Well, that's my problem.
There's a lot of them. I think one of them will. Whether it be Devontae Bosby, whether we see Yadam, you know, finally live up to the expectations that we've been, hoping for him. Who else do we have
Devontae
over there?
Devontae Harris, Duke Dawson.
Yep. Well, one of those guys I feel like he's going to step up and play solid football.
See, and this is sort of when we start getting this conversation, my issue with the draft. I thought it was a good draft, but I didn't like the way it fell because, like, by the Broncos waiting until the third round to draft a cornerback, you're kind of indirectly letting me know what you think about the group that you already have, to a certain degree. And when I look at the group that the Broncos have, I can't point to any one guy that says, I believe it's that guy because of blank.
But now, you're looking at it wrong. You know, I thought I've taught you better than this, Zach. You're looking at this draft. I'm trying to. I thought I had, but, you know, once I think that you understand it, then, you know, a month later, you come back and you start spitting this nonsense again. So just put your listening cap on here for me, buddy.
It has been put on.
You know, when you're going through the draft, you're not going to reach on a position just because you think you have a little bit of a need there. And so the Broncos certainly weren't going to reach for a cornerback because they look at the position and say, you know what? Okay, yes, we have a need there opposite A.J. Boye. I think they are high on the guys that they have, higher than us. And they can't be thrilled about all those guys, but I think they're higher on those guys than most people in Broncos country are. On top of that, when I think the premium on that position for Vic Fangio isn't as high as what it was around here when you look at, you know, under Wade Phillips and playing man-to-man. As much zone as they play here, the premium and the point of emphasis on that position isn't what it used to be. Okay, so I think they feel like they can get by with other guys at that position that they don't have to run around and cover guys man-to-man where you need, you know, the best of the best out there when you're going to just try to lock down man-to-man coverage. And so I think that they're putting the point of emphasis on other positions higher than the cornerback position. And I think the draft just unfolds the way the draft unfolds. You can't reach on guys because you might have a little bit of a need there.
What if they have a lot of bit of a need?
Well, they took a guy early third round. Hopefully that guy pans out for us. It wasn't like they just, you know, did the tackle thing and just said, nope, you know, we're out of it.
That's true.
I mean, they did
That's
take
true.
This guy in the third round. They must like him a lot. Everything they said that they really liked him. But that doesn't mean he's going to come in and be a starter day one, especially with everything that's going on.
Yeah, I just I just feel very uncomfortable about the cornerback room. And if you walked away, and I know we're going back, I'm jumping back in the draft mobile, but if you told me you walked away from the first two rounds with Jerry Jeudy and Trayvon Diggs, the wide receiver, or the cornerback out of Alabama, a starting corner that was mocked in the first round by it seemed like every other guy, I just would have been like A++. And it's hard to differentiate that opinion from K.J. Hamler, because K.J. Hamler is who they actually picked. And I like K.J. Hamler.
You're going down the Mike Evans route right here. Please stop. Yes, you are, because you know what you're doing here, because you also wanted them to take a tackle in the second round. And now you wanted them to take a cornerback.
Both those positions are big positions of need.
I understand that, but pick your lane here, because I don't want to hear in a year, you know, when Trayvon Diggs is an all-pro, it's like they should have taken him in the second round, but you've been screaming about that guy from Houston that they should have the tackle, or
Josh Jones.
Cleveland. Yeah. Yes. So, like, hey, you know, don't. I'm not going to let you be Mike Evans here. I'm not letting you pull a Mike Evans here and all of a sudden revisit this thing in a year and start pinpointing these receivers that the Broncos should have taken. Like, hey, pick your lane here and stay in your lane, because it's easy to criticize after the fact that you start looking at all these players they could have picked. Well, who did you want them to pick? Do you want him to pick KJ Hamler? Do you want him to pick Diggs?
I wanted him to pick Josh Jones.
That's why I wanted him to pick in the second round.
But here's the thing. The way that it fell, and I know you...
Save that clip, Stephen.
Look, you could have got...
File that thing away.
Check this out. You could have got Jerry Jeudy in the first round. You could have got Trayvon Diggs in the second round and still drafted Josh Jones at the top of the third round. It just move up. Okay, he could went like four spots before Michael Oje Moutia, five spots before. So I know you just can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. The draft is one player at a time, and you're in reactionary mode. But anyway, this is not my intention to go down this road.
But when you start talking about
the cornerback room, and I'm looking at the room, and I see mystery flavor. Remember, every once in a while, Eminem would probably like a mystery flavor.
You got mystery flavor ring pops.
You got to chew it, close your eyes, and guess. That's what I figure. Like I'm doing with the cornerback room. Who is this? Choo-choo. Is this Devonta Harris, the AAF guy? Is it Devontae Bosby? Is it Duke Dawson, who got traded after 1 year from the page? What flavor is this? Is Bryce Callahan, who's never healthy? I'm not sure.
Bryce Callahan. I forgot about him. Yeah, we got Bryce.
We're good.
Settle, relax. We're good. That's all good. Well, that would be my pick. Would be OJ Moutier.
OJ Moore for the surprise.
Yes, for the surprise.
Surprise rookie gem. All right.
Yes, that would be mine.
I'll give you my pick, and I'll tell you what selection Bleacher Report picked as their surprise rookie GM, and I promise we'll get to the morning show bumping their gums, having our name once again in their mouth. Go figure. We'll take a dive into it next. All right, so back to business.
Let's go.
Back to business. Got sidetracked there. Bleacher Report. They predicted every NFL team's surprise rookie gem, and I asked you who you thought that it could be. You said Michael OJ Mutia, who was the 13th pick in the third round, the cornerback out of Iowa, who has been widely discussed here on this show. I will go with my rookie gem, my surprise rookie gem. I'll go with Lloyd Cushenberry III.
Oh, good one.
Because I believe that Lloyd Cushenberry III, Sir Lloyd Cushenberry III,
yes.
Excuse me.
Put some respect on that.
I think he's going to be a 16-game starter for the Denver Broncos. I think he's going to be an instant culture guy that lifts the status in that regard of the room. And I think that he's going to be a really good player. This is a guy that was a part of maybe, you know, a great offensive line of all time. In the most literal sense, at LSU, team captain. And I think that guy's going to come in here and be a cornerstone for this offense for about the next half a decade and hopefully more. So I'll go with the 19th pick in the third round, Sir Lloyd Cushenberry III, center out of LSU. But that's not who Bleacher Report picked.
No?
Nope. They did not pick Michael OJ Mutia. They did not pick Lloyd Cushenberry III. They did not pick McTelvin Ajim. They picked the fourth round selection, the 12th pick in the fourth round, the tight end out of Missouri, Albert Okwuegbunam. They said, this is Brent Soblensky of Bleacher Report, says, quote, "The Denver Broncos made Drew Locke's development a point of emphasis by acquiring multiple skill position performers. The additions of Melvin Gordon, Jerry Jeudy, and K.J. Hamler to work alongside Cortland Sutton and last year's first-round pick Noah Fant give Denver an outstanding young cast of playmakers. GM John Elway also drafted Locke's collegiate security blanket, tight end Albert Okwuegbunam, in this year's fourth round. The two-time All-SEC performer is more receiver than tight end. The 258-pound target's 4.49 second 40-yard dash speed adds a different dynamic when working from the slot or wing. He and Fant can create numerous mismatches out of 11 personnel against base defenses," end quote. What do you make of that one?
I love it. You know, I mean, you look at the situation with Albert Okwuegbunam, and you look at coming here playing with his college teammate, Drew Locke. Obviously, you have a connection with that guy. You have a rapport with that guy. They get along very, very well. That goes a long way in helping your development. And when the quarterback knows you and trusts you and likes you. So that gives him, you know, a step ahead of everybody else right away for a young football player. And then you look at the position and you look at the things that he can do and bring to the table. Like you said, running that 4.49 at 255 pounds and just his size, his speed, and the different things that offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur can do with a guy like this. I think I like it. I like it. And we don't know how it's going to play out. They might have certain packages there where it's just him on the football field in the one tight end sets and Noah Fant on the sideline. We'll see how they'll rotate him. But obviously, you know, you would think Fant would be the main guy and then Albert would be the second guy. But a lot of two tight end sets, like they're talking about, with both those guys on the field. Red zone, I think you ought to have a special package for a guy like Albert Okwuegbunam. And that relationship that he has with the starting quarterback obviously goes a long way. So I like that. I like that. I think he has a chance to be that surprise gem of this year's draft.
Yeah, and he's got like home run hitting ability. So I wonder if, you know, after the season, after 16 games are played, if like once every three or four games, Albert Okwuegbunam is just getting loose on a seam route and taking one to the house.
If that's the case, that would be something special.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying every other week, but every three or four games. And then you look back in the season, you go, oh, he finished as a fourth round pick. He finished with 580 yards with five touchdowns.
That would be a great year. We got to do that at some point. We'll go through and kind of project and what we project and what would be a great year, what would not be a great year for these guys, especially when you're looking at the receivers, first, second round. And with him, you know, you can put numbers to it. So
sure.
That would be great. I mean, if he can go over 500 yards as a rookie, because he's not going to be the starter, right? I mean,
right. That's
going to be Noah Fant.
Sure.
Is going to be the main weapon there. But obviously, when you have weapons like that with both these guys' size and strength and speed, you want them on the football field. So it's going to be, you know, Pat Shurmur has a lot of weapons at his disposal. But being a young tight end, we looked at the numbers last year, Zach. I did all the research on those numbers. I mean, there's only been one guy. Remember when I did the research?
Yeah, we didn't hear from you for about a week. You were just in the basement.
Right, it was Mike Ditka, right?
It was Mike Ditka.
The only one rookie to go over 1,000 yards?
That's it, as a tight end. That's it.
So we usually don't see tight ends come in the league and make a huge, huge impact, and especially in this situation, no offseason. It's going to be tough for him to come in and have a huge impact on this team. But we'll see. I mean, he has the things that you just can't teach. It doesn't matter. I mean, he's got the 4.49 speed, and you're going to have – who are you putting on him? Who are we putting on Albert?
Right.
I mean, are we putting a safety on him? Okay, well, it's Debo. Get out of the club. I'm just bigger and stronger than you, right? I mean, how are you going to guard 6'5", 258 when you're, you know, 6 foot 190? I mean, it's just a hard thing to do. Are you putting a linebacker on him because you want to muscle up with it? Well, he's going to run right by that linebacker. He has things you can't teach. You know, I don't want to sit here and compare him to Gronk, because Gronk's one of the best to ever do it, but that's what the Patriots had in Gronk. He's faster than the linebackers, and he's too big for these safeties, corners, nickelbacks trying to cover him. So he has that type of size like a Gronkowski that he just presents nightmares to defensive coordinators and their game plan, and how do you stop this type of guy? Obviously, there's things he's got to work on. We broke his game down, and, you know, some of the route running stuff, he's got to get a little bit better. But for a big man, when he gets moving, he is something else, I'm telling you. So that's a nice luxury to have if you're Pat Shurmur and the weapons that you have on offense. But he's one of those guys that can make an instant impact right away because of his size and his speed. And you just say, hey, look, this is what we're doing right here. We're going to be flexing you out here. You're running a go route. Okay, I mean, that's not that difficult to do. It's not a lot of thinking going on here. We're going to flex you out. We're going to run a slant route. This is the package for this week for you right here. Boom, that's it. So I think if you do that for him,
I love that.
You slow things down for him, and you just say you don't throw too much at these young guys early on, especially, you know, I'm going to say it, you know, 10 times a day because of the offseason and what's not happening in the offseason. It's going to make their transition a lot harder. So make it simple. Make it things like that where you give Drew Lock an indicator. And what I mean by an indicator, when you put one of these tight ends out wide, who's covering them? Is a cornerback out there? Well, cornerback out there, it's probably not man-to-man. It's probably zone. Is a safety or linebacker out there? Well, that means it's man-to-man. So you give your quarterback an indicator right now, what is going to be, man or zone, and then you have mismatches with your guy outside or maybe your guy's inside. If you move Judy inside or Hamler inside right there. So I like what you can do with a guy like this. But expectations for him early on, I think we got to taper those a little bit. But this guy's got a chance to be a great football player.
I absolutely love this conversation. I really do. And there's more meat on that bone that I want to get to eventually. But first, the morning show this morning. Now, they were talking about the match. And this is about 2 minutes of audio, so I just want to prepare yourself. I have not heard this, but I had people tweeting me about it, and I had a couple RamosLaw.com texters. This is Beavis and Butthead from earlier this morning.
Hey, by the way, on the fan poll, they put it up, like, who would win the foursome? Here's the question. Who would win the 104.3 The Fan version of the match? Orlando and Sandy are in last at 3%.
Right.
Columbus and DMAC are in fourth place, so 7%. You and I are in second place, with 11%. Stokely and Zach, 79% of the people.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Does Zach play golf?
I don't know.
Dude, we are getting totally disrespected.
Wow.
I
want this.
Yeah,
this needs to happen.
It's disrespect of biblical proportions here.
I mean, didn't we just find out last week that Stokely is like one of two people to do almost the impossible and hit this house on the ridge of Castle Pines North that like nobody hits.
And Zach is too busy playing hoops.
Right.
He's a basketball guy.
He's too long and lanky, too. You know, too many moving parts to his swing. He's too gangly.
Yeah.
He's the gangly golfer.
I just don't think Zach has any discernible golf skills.
Zach is more like Ichabod Crane game.
Yes. Ichabod Crane. That's exactly right? What Zach looks like.
Yeah.
You know who Zach reminds me? Zach is like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yes!
That's how he's built.
Yes!
Exactly how his movement skills are exactly.
Yes!
Just, yeah. He's Scooby.
I could just easily see Zach just saying, zoinks! You know?
Zoinks! Oh, Scoob! Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm angry.
Hey, the listeners to the fan are wrong about a lot of things.
Yes,
They've never been more wrong about anything than this.
Wow. I mean, they go from that to taking cheap shots at you. Oh my gosh. Holy cow, they're calling you Shaggy?
That is way too funny.
Wow. Wow. Listen, first of all, I'd put you on my back early on, right? And we would dominate the best ball side of it right away. We would dominate that. And then the alternate shot, we'd figure it out. And so, yeah, the listeners got it right, like they usually do. We would win this thing. We would work on your game a little bit, obviously, and get a little bit better. But I'll be
out there today working.
We'll be. Oh, I love it. We would be good. We would dominate. Listeners are right once again. Thank you for that.
And I would love to take on this challenge because you're probably the best golfer at the fan. I'm just getting started, so I'd probably favor a very conservative play and just not kill us. And I believe that we would win this thing. I really do.
I know we would. And there's no doubt about it. And, you know, he's bringing up me hitting the house. Look, I'm not a scratch golfer. But still, you know, I've played some bad rounds. But, you know, competition would bring out the best in me. And you know, you saw what Peyton did. And I got him ready for that. And we would take those guys down.
But
there's not even a doubt about it.
Well, we should make this happen. I think it's a great idea. There was hundreds of votes on this poll that we put out there. I think it would be a blast if we could somehow pull it off. You know, this season, this spring, summer, fall season, I would absolutely eat that up. Shaggy. Call me Shaggy.
Wow.
I love it. Hey, the voice of Shaggy. You know who the voice of Shaggy was?
No.
Casey Kasem.
Really?
The old DJ. That was the voice of Shaggy for like two decades, I want to say.
Oh.
All right. That's what you get here, noon to three.
All right.
Stoke, the history says... History says that the Broncos rookie wide receivers could face a tough road this year. But could things be different with this group specifically? Interesting conversation we'll take a dive into next. Stoke, history says the Broncos rookie wide receivers could face a tough road this year, but are things different with this particular group? Interesting conversation. From Jeff Legwald on ESPN.com, he put out a piece this morning detailing that historically, rookie wideouts in Denver specifically have had a rough start to their career. He says, quote, Jeff Legwald, quote, historically, however, has not always been kind to rookie wide receivers in Denver. The Broncos have had just three rookies finish with more than 40 catches. Whoa, first of all, hold on. Wow, that is incredible. The Broncos have had just three rookies finish with more than 40 catches in their history.
Wow.
That's really interesting. He says, though, most talent evaluators believe wide receivers in recent drafts have been far more prepared to play early in the NFL than they were even a decade ago. NFL cornerbacks are usually bigger, faster, and far more willing to match up in the man-to-man situations than many receivers face in college football. The room a college receiver often has to work with is far greater, and the adjustments to tighter catch windows can take some time. The past four wide receivers taken by the Broncos in the first round before Jerry Jeudy, Ricky Nathiel, and I Nathiel, excuse me, Ricky Nathiel, Marcus Nash, Ashley Lilly,
Am I saying that one right?
Yeah.
Ashley Lalee and Demaryius Thomas.
Natalie?
Nateel.
Oh, I thought you said, okay. Just double check on that.
I did screw it up out of the gate. You're absolutely right. But remember that. Bookmark it. I'll come back for you.
I couldn't help it. I was like, wait, who's that guy?
So you got Ricky Nateel, Marcus Nash, Ashley Lalee, and DT finished their first seasons with 2, 4, 35, and 22 catches, respectively.
Wow.
And even for someone like Sutton, who had a degree of success, the transition was difficult. Sutton said he had to really work on his route running, end quote. So interesting, looking back at the history of the Broncos specifically and what it looks like for wide receivers, particularly in the first round, and keeping Jerry Jeudy in mind here, just really have not burst on the scene like we have seen so many other wide receivers do in the history of the NFL.
I like that breakdown by Jeff Lagwell. I think recent history now is you look at these guys coming to the league, they're a lot more ready to go than you know, what guys – you know, late 90s when I came in, even, you know, 2000s. These guys now with what they do in high school and Pop Warner and college, they're so much more prepared and ready to go and play in the NFL than 10, 15 years ago. So I think you look at a guy like Jerry Jeudy, I'm expecting it. I mean, I'm just expecting, I mean, there's a spot open too, and that he's going to be starting. And if he stays healthy for 16 games, he's going to have over 40 catches. The other one is Hamler. You know, will he be able to get over 40 this year? Can we have two of those guys this year? Certainly, I think it's a realistic possibility. I really do. When you look at both of these guys, you look at right away, I mean, they're going to be on the football field a lot. If they stay healthy, we know Judy's going to be a starter. Hamler, if he's healthy, I mean, he's brought here to be the number three guy. And if he's healthy for 16 games, I mean, I think he should be right around a 40-catch season for him.
Okay.
Could we have two, Zach?
Two rookies at 40 catches or more? No.
Not even a possibility? 0% chance?
No, I didn't say that.
Is that what you said?
I didn't say that. You asked me.
Well, the way you said it, you're like, no. I just kind of, you stuck that no. I just thought maybe.
No, I was thinking about it. It's like when John said, no.
Oh, gotcha.
Right?
It
was one of those.
Where do you put the odds? Give me the odds. What are the odds? You know, how many percent could it happen?
30% chance it could happen. 70% likelihood it will not happen.
That's probably, you know, where I would be at. I mean, is it likely to happen? No, but I think it's a realistic possibility. It could happen here in this situation, given the dynamics of this football team, given the needs of this football team. I think it could be one of those situations where, hey, it could happen this year. It shouldn't surprise us.
Well, I have one real reason why I don't believe it will happen, and it's incredibly unlikely, and I'll tell you what that is next. All right, we're just having a conversation based off what Jeff Lagwell wrote on ESPN.com, talking about just historically rookie wide receivers in Denver have really
let that Van Halen breathe a little bit.
Yeah, this is peak Van Halen.
Oh, I used to love me some Van Halen.
They were so good.
Oh, love them.
Now we just wait.
Yep.
All right. James Marilat, our good buddy from 1043thefan.com, drops by. The history of the league really says that wide receivers can show up and be stars right away. Like 1,000-yard guys right out of the gate. From you go back to the 80s, Chris Collinsworth and, you know, Bill Brooks and Ernest Givens, or the 90s, Joey Galloway, Terry Glenn, Randy Moss. They show up and just be 1,000-yard guys. Anquan Boldin, Michael Clayton, Marquise Colston, A.J. Green, even as recent as a couple years ago, OBJ, Mike Evans, Kelvin Benjamin. I think it just happened this past year as well. With one of the guys from Tennessee, I want to say. But anyway.
Brown.
Yes, Brown, I believe. But when you really peel back the curtain on what it's been like in Denver, it just hasn't been like that, particularly for first-round wide receivers. And James, Stoke and I were just having the conversation, like, using 40 catches as a jump-off point, because never has a first-round selection at the wide receiver position in Denver finished with 40 catches his rookie season. Stoke says that, hey, not that it's likely, but you could see two of them do it this year in Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler. And I don't think that it's, not that it's not possible, I don't think it's anywhere close to likely, just because of, don't forget who the big dog you have to feed, Courtland Sutton. He was the only player this past year that was over 40 receptions, or excuse me, Royce Freeman at 43 as a running back. But in terms of a wide receiver or a tight end, he was the only player that was over 40 catches. Noah Fant, can't forget him, Broncos first-round draft pick from a year ago, had 40. It was approaching 600 yards. So when you add up the Courtland Sutton factor, the Noah Fant factor, in addition to the Jerry Jeudy factor, I just, in terms of K.J. Hamler, not that he's not going to have a nice rookie season or can't be involved Sunday in and Sunday out. When it comes to, like, 40 receptions, that type of conversation, I think it's just a little bit too much because there's too many mouths to feed. James, what say you?
Well, yeah, I mean, if Jerry Jeudy doesn't get to 40 catches, I'll be extremely disappointed. I mean, that's 2.5 catches a game, so he's got to get to that point. I think, you know, when you're looking at someone like Hamler and he's down the pecking order and he's going to be, what, on any given play, the third, fourth option. So I think if he got to 40, that would be a bit of a coup. I do think, though, historically, you know, that data is a little skewed. You know, a lot of times you got to look at, well, when those guys came in here, you know, who were their quarterbacks? You know, Demaryius Thomas comes in here, and I think it's what, the Kyle Orton, you know, Tim Tebow, that kind of, I think those were the quarterbacks when he was drafted. And then a lot of those players just weren't very good. I mean, Ashley Lalee and Marcus Nash and, you know, Ricky Natillo was pretty average. So I think that based on the fact that, you know, a lot of those former first-round picks didn't turn out to be very good players, if Jerry Jeudy and maybe even Hamler, but for sure Jeudy, if he doesn't get to 40 catches this year, that should be set off a bunch of alarms. That should make us worry that he's going to go into the group of those first-round busts that the Broncos have had in the past.
Oh, don't say that, James. I'm with you.
I know.
Judy's got to get over 40 this year if he's healthy for 16 games. I mean, that's a no-brainer. And trust me, if he's healthy, he will deliver and he will have over 40 catches. Now you look at Hamler, and it's a toss-up there for me. Do I think it's likely? No, that he gets over 40 catches. But we'll see. I just, you know, like you said, Zach, there's a lot of weapons on this football team, and he's a young wide receiver that how many plays is he going to actually play? So it's going to be very difficult for him to get to 40, but there's an opportunity there. You know, there's an opportunity for Jeudy, for both these guys to play a lot of plays. And so I guess we'll see. And hopefully they have a lot of opportunities. Hopefully this offense is better and Hamler has a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, it's a franchise, though, that has not had a lot of success, if you think about it, in terms of drafting wide receivers. I mean, Rod Smith was a, you know, undrafted free agent. Ed McCaffrey came over after being with a couple other teams. Stoke, you came over here after being with a couple other teams. You know, Demaryius, obviously they drafted, and he was a first round pick, and he'll be a Ring of Famer. But even go
Decker
back to
and Demaryius, those were same year. Those were two good draft picks right there.
Sure.
Yeah, but Haven Moses was a Bill before he came over here. I mean, going back to the early days of the organization, they really haven't drafted that. Well, one, they haven't had a ton of great receivers. I mean, it's probably five or six, and you know, most of them weren't guys that the team drafted. So Jeudy and Hamler have got to be kind of breaking. They got to buck that trend if they're going to find success here.
James Merrillat from 104.3thefan.com drops by. James, I've been waiting to talk to you. I've been waiting to talk to you for a couple days now because, because of what
here
you said this past week when you said, and you already know where I'm going here.
I know where you're going.
That Derek Wolfe is the Devontae Booker of DNs. And that one, man, you took it too far there. You took.
What were you sipping on, man? Come on!
One of those quarantine cocktails had your head spinning. Please just try to explain to me your thought process in making the comparison between those two.
Well, admittedly, it wasn't the best example I've ever come up with. You know, it wasn't the best analogy. So I'll say that to start things. And really, I was referring to a conversation that I had with the guys on the drive a week or two earlier, and they were talking about people who were, you know, kind of on the roster for a long time, but, you know, were never really great, and sometimes you kind of even forgot they were there. That's what I was referring to from the standpoint of Derek Wolfe was on this team for 8 years. He was never the best defensive player by any means. He was never a guy that, you know, if Derek Wolfe couldn't go on a Sunday, you thought, uh-oh, what the heck are we going to do? Whereas Von Miller couldn't go on a Sunday, you'd think, oh, that drastically changes things. Put it this way, Derek Wolfe's availability didn't move the line in Vegas. That's what I was trying to get across. Is Devontae Booker the best example of that? Oh. No. I'll be the first one to say it, but Devontae Booker led this team in rushing 1 year, so it's not as though he did nothing. But, you know, to me, it's a guy that's, you know, he was a good player when he was here. At times, he was a really good player, but he was by no means ever great. And, you know, the conversation was whether or not he's going to go up in the Ring of Fame. And sure. Those guys were like, yeah, he's for sure going up there. He never even went to one Pro Bowl. I mean, Al Wilson went to 5, and he's not in the Ring of Fame. So, you know, it was kind of a reality check that I was trying to provide. And did I maybe go a little too far with my example and my analogy? Probably, but I stand behind my main point, which was that Derek Wolfe is not a Ring of Fame player. That was the main thing I was trying to convey.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. You know, I don't think he's a Ring of Famer either. But putting him in the category of Devontae Booker, I think is unfair. But I certainly understand where you were going with it and what you were trying, the point you were trying to make there with Derek Wolfe. A good player, not a special player, not a Ring of Famer. I'm kind of with you with that point right there, James. I got to ask you though. Zach, do you have something to say there about that?
Well, no, well, I just wanted to,
before I ask him another question here.
Yeah, and I wanted to say, like, you got yourself in trouble because you were trying to make a fair point, a point which I agree with. I don't believe, and with all due respect to Derek Wolfe, I don't believe he's a Ring of Famer because that classification is a life of its own. And Derek Wolfe was a really good player here for a number of years, but I think you have to be a great player to end up on the Ring of Fame. And the point that I'll point out is that, like, when the Broncos were at their peak during Derek Wolfe's tenure here with the Broncos, he was such a big part of it. Like, you look back to the 2015 season. Did you realize that from week 14 on through the last four games of the season and the two playoff games and then the Super Bowl, Derek Wolfe was involved with at least a half a sack in every one of those games? So week 14, 15, 16, 17, to close the 15 season, going into the playoffs, has a sack against the Steelers, has a sack against Tom Brady and the Patriots, gets to Cam Newton in the Super Bowl. So I thought that he did enough to not put himself in an analogy juxtaposed with Devontae Booker, who, while did lead the Broncos 1 year in rushing, I want to say it was like 660 yards or something like that. So I just didn't think it was unfair to Derek, really at the end. That's basically what I'm trying to say. I thought Derek deserved a better analogy when you're trying to make a point that I happen to agree with.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, sometimes when when you're talking off the top of your head and trying to come up with examples, the wrong thing, you know, pops in your mind. Not necessarily
sure.
The wrong thing, but not the
sure.
best thing.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, like I say, I'll admit it was not the, and I pride myself on my analogies. So, you know, it hurts me to say this,
right?
But it was not my best analogy. I'll admit
usually
but,
you're spot on,
but you're spot on.
And now I give you, okay, once you give me your reason and your explanation here, I can kind of say, okay, maybe he didn't start too early that day. I say, okay, James, you know, because you're right. I mean, usually you have good points of reference and you got good analogies. And this one, you know, when I was on with, I saw it on Twitter, I was on with Dan Jacobs on Saturday, and And so we were talking a little bit about it, and I was just like, man, I don't know where James was going with this. He lost me on this one because I think he went a little bit overboard, a little bit unfair. But I get where you're going here.
But I think James, I think when you raise your hand and say, hey, this was not my best work, and you raise your hand and say that, you actually gain more credibility with our listeners from the analogy standpoint. And as we cross through the threshold of seconds...
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.